It's just one verse. We'll all stand in honor of the Holy Scriptures. I'll read to you Genesis chapter 3, verse 22. And the Lord God said, "Behold, the man is become as one of us, to know good and evil. And now, lest he put forth his hand and take also of the tree of life and eat and live forever." You may be seated. The introductory verse is Genesis 3:22. Name of this sermon is Rocky. We learned from Mark that a couple of the people started the imprecatory prayers a little bit early. Maybe this is a result of their doing the imprecatory prayers a little bit early. We hope so that that was true. September the 11th is when some Christians believe that Jesus Christ was born. They believe it was not on the popular day of December 25th, in the middle of winter, when most of the Christian churches celebrate his birth. December 25th happens to be the birthday of a whole host of other false gods, like Mithras, and is in the season of winter, which is cold, and the time of daylight is at its shortest time. April 3rd, 33 AD, is the date when many of his followers believe he was crucified. I am not sure if this date is correct, but I believe that is very close to being right. Let's believe they are the correct dates. If they are, then how many years are between the death of Jesus Christ and the year 2001? The number of years between 33 and 2001 is 1,967. Thus, we get the date of the Newsweek magazine, April 3rd, 1967. April 3rd is the date of the murder of Jesus Christ. And then 1,967 years later is the false flag event known as 9/11. Is that wild or what? Is that just a strange coincidence? I don't know if that information that I have just shared with you is totally correct or not, but I think that it has merit when you realize that believers of false God think that numbers are very important. On the cover of Newsweek, on the above-mentioned date, is a picture of David Rockefeller. He is sitting on the edge of the window, which shows the background of the New York City skyscrapers. It was the time when David's big bank, Chase Manhattan, was financing the building of the World Tower Center. David was the leader in having these two towers built at a time when there was a high vacancy rate of building sites in the surrounding area. Nevertheless, he pulled the strings to have it built. But notice his wristwatch. His wristwatch is set with one hand pointing to the 9 and the other hand pointing towards the 11. How strange is that, or is it strange? Why would that be the case? Think about this. David Rockefeller, one of the richest people in the world, was determined to have the towers built. Even though there was much opposition to this structure being built because the market was already oversaturated with office buildings. The price for office space had deteriorated for several years. And the year was 1967, 34 years till the major event occurred. Here is a picture of the Newsweek magazine. Notice the date right up there. I don't know if you can read it or not, but it says April the 3rd, 1967. It also says 40 cents. Inflation has gone up. And the captions, David Rockefeller, new era in banking, Newsweek. But there's the wristwatch. Now, you can't see it there. But if we can enlarge that, the next picture will show one hand's to the 9, the other hand's to the 11. April 3rd of this year, it'll be 50 years ago that David Rockefeller laid out the reasons for the timing of the 9/11 attacks on a magazine cover. And there is something else, too. At the end of this magazine is an advertisement for Terryton cigarettes. Remember those? Both the man and the woman, each with a black eye, were wearing a shirt that said Terryton on them with two vertical red lines shaped like Twin Towers. The lady says, "Us Terryton smokers would rather fight than switch." That's at the end of the magazine. And it wasn't just this magazine cover that had the hands of the clock pointing to the 9/11, or had the time reading 11 minutes after 9, or had signs depicting 9 feet 11 inches. There were a lot of movies and television shows that did the same thing. Bill Clinton said a similar thing in a speech after being challenged from a person in the audience about 9/11 not being planned and accomplished by the Arabs. In other words, the person asked Bill about the fact that 9/11 was a job that was put together by the higher-ups of the United States government. Bill answered, I'm quoting, 9/11 is not an inside job. It was Osama bin Laden's job with 19 people from Saudi Arabia. They murdered 3,000 Americans and foreigners, including over 200 other Muslims. And we looked like idiots, folks, denying the people who murdered our fellow citizens did it when they were continuing to murder people all around the world. So we heard from you, so you go away, and the people all applauded. This happened shortly after 9/11 occurred. Notice that Bill Clinton said that it was done by 19 people under Osama bin Laden who were from Saudi Arabia. If that were true, then why did we attack Iraq and Afghanistan and not Saudi Arabia? Think about that for a minute. If Saudi Arabia was where all the terrorists were from, why did we not fight with them? Why did we fight with two countries that were innocent? But look at the snippets that Hollywood gave us in movies and television shows prior to this attack. A Terminator 2, 1991. Sign on the bridge where the vehicle blew up had the height painted on the bridge that said, caution, 9 feet, 11 inches. Independence Day, 1996. On the computer screen is portrayed the following, 0911. The Simpsons, 1997. The lady in the cartoon holds up an advertisement for traveling to New York that says $9 with a picture of the two towers right behind the 9. 911. The Parent Trap, 1998. The butler looks at a picture drawn by one of the twins. It's a dog with the inscription 911 in the balloon as if he's telling us the date. Godzilla. I never saw this movie. 1998. The man looks at his watch and has one hand pointing at the 9 and the other at the 11. The Matrix, 1999. Looking at the person's passport in which is the following date, the 11th day of September, 9th month, in the year 01, 2001. The Patriot, 2000. He weighs the rocking chair. It weighs exactly 9 pounds, 11 ounces. He then sits in it very carefully, but it falls apart and he falls to the floor. And on and on. There are a multitude of smoking guns about 9/11. There are questions that are asked by architects and engineers that questions what they have been told, as well as a lot of lay people who do not understand the official position. Here are just 5 of the many questions that need to be explained. First question, why didn't NORAD fulfill its standard operating procedure and intercept the planes? Was NORAD intentionally confused by the war games taking place on the morning of 9/11? or were they ordered to stand down? 2. What was the cause of the collapse of the World Tower Center Building 7, the Salomon Building? The owner of the building, Larry Silverstein, said he made the decision to pull the building. Pulling a building is the industry term for controlled demolition. The 47-story tall building came down in 6.5 seconds. It had to be controlled demolition, and it wasn't even mentioned in the commission's book on the event. And, of course, you know about the British Communications Center. Said it fell down 20 minutes before it even fell down. 3, how did Rudolph Giuliani know that the South Tower is about to collapse? Giuliani told ABC's Peter Jennings, quote, "We were operating out of there when we were told that the World Trade Center was going to collapse," unquote. 4, in the list and picture of the 19 Saudi Arabians who were supposed to be guilty of this tragedy, remember what Bill Clinton had said in his statement that I gave in the above pages. There were at least 5 of them who were found to be still alive. How could they be burnt up in flames and yet be still living? So they couldn't have been the hijackers. And if they weren't, then who was? FBI was on the ball in that case. 5, from July 4th to the 14th, 2001, Osama bin Laden was being treated for a kidney infection at the American Hospital, Dubai, United Arab Emirates. Members of bin Laden's family left the United States with the blessing of the government when all other planes were grounded. To find Osama, you just had to follow the long extension cord to the cave where he was hiding. President Bush said repeatedly, quote, "Either you are with us or you are with the enemy. There is no in between," unquote. Is that true? Are you either with President Bush or are you with the enemy? President Bush is a member of the prestigious Freemasonic 322 Club at Yale University. William Russell and Alfonso Taft co-founded the secret organization from Germany in 1832 named Skull and Bones 322. The fortunes of each of the two families came from opium selling. Each year, 15 juniors are selected to join the Skulls in their senior year. I'll name a few famous bonesmen. William Howard Taft, United States President. George H.W. Bush, United States President, head of the CIA. George W. Bush, United States President. Averill Harriman. H.J. Hines II. Henry Luce, Time Life CIA. Bill Bundy of the CIA. John Kerry, Secretary of State, and William F. Buckley of the CIA. The number 322 refers to Genesis chapter 3, verse 22, our introductory verse. President Bush appointed a lot of his fellow Skull and Bone members to important positions in the United States government, from Secretary of State to ambassadors to advisors. Skull and Bone members were in our government big time. So John Kerry, Prescott Bush, and the two George Bushes, Bush's uncle John Walker, his great-uncle George Herbert Walker Jr., and his cousin Ray Walker are all members of this Freemasonic organization. In addition, David Rockefeller either founded or helped found several international organizations. The first is Bilderbergers. I'll just list some famous attendees. David Rockefeller, Henry Kissinger, Hillary and Bill Clinton, Tony Blair, Gordon Brown, Angela Merkel, Alan Greenspan, head of the Federal Reserve, Ben Bernanke, head of the Federal Reserve, Larry Summers, Treasury Department, George Soros, Donald Rumsfeld, Robert Murdoch, oh, he owns all the newspapers, Jean-Claude Trichet, UN Bank President, Mervyn King, Bank of England, Edmund D. Rothschild, Robert Oppenheimer, Robert McNamara, Henry Ford II, Colin Powell, Zbigniew Brzezinski, Bill and Melinda Gates, oh, Condoleezza Rice, Bill Richardson, and Paul Wolfowitz, just to name a few. Another organization David Rockefeller founded, was the Council of Foreign Relations. Some famous members from there. Well, David Rockefeller, Henry Kissinger, Bill Clinton, Conrad Black, William F. Buckley, Bill Bundy, Alan Dulles, Gerald Ford, Herbert Hoover, Angelina Jolie. Oh, now I know why she has a kid from other races. George Kennan, Carl Sagan, Paul Warburg, Oprah Winfrey, George Soros, Colin Powell, Bill Moyers, Rupert Murdoch, Zbigniew Brzezinski, and Edgar Broffin Sr. How about the Trilateral Commission? Oh, David Rockefeller helped found that one too. Some famous members: David Rockefeller, George Herbert Walker Bush, Bill Clinton, Zbigniew Brzezinski, Jean-Claude Trichet, Henry Kissinger, and Jimmy Carter. Bohemian Grove, a few famous attendees: Henry Kissinger, David Rockefeller, Ronald Reagan, George W. Bush, Gerald Ford, Richard Nixon, Malcolm Forbes, William F. Buckley, Clint Eastwood, and William Randolph Hearst. Committee of 300, some famous members: the British Royals, the Dutch Royals, the House of Habsburg, Winston Churchill, Cecil Rhodes, George Bush, Aldous Huxley. Did you ever read any of his books? Henry Kissinger, David Rockefeller, Giuseppe Mazzini, and H.G. Wells. This committee was behind Beatlemania to introduce American teenagers to drugs and rock and roll. David also used his unlimited financial bankroll to purchase the land now known as the Smoky Mountains Natural Park. Colonial Williamsburg and Planned Parenthood. Are we with President Bush? He worships another god. He is a member of a secret society that is in opposition to our God. This farce called an election shows that America is a one-party state. Both Democrats and Republicans work for the agenda of the Illuminati. They create a charade that looks like each party is different, but in the end, the Democrats and Republicans vote for anything the Illuminati wants in order to push forward the Illuminati agenda for total world domination. This is why actors make such good politicians, because this whole covert political charade at this time is an act being played out to control all the people in a so-called democracy. If you'd like to know who's going to win the United States presidential election, you could have just called up super wealthy David Rockefeller before he died, and he could have told you, because it's all a staged event. This may be challenging for most people to believe, but it's true, and if given a chance and enough money to fund a proper investigation, this can be proven. There is no true democracy in America, only an illusion that looks like a supposed democracy. Currently, democracy is imprisonment disguised as freedom. David Rockefeller died on March 20, 2017. 26 years earlier, David said at a Bilderberg meeting the following. This is very important. Quote, We are grateful to the Washington Post, the New York Times, Time Magazine, and other great publications whose directors have attended our meetings and respected their promises of discretion for almost 40 years. It would have been impossible for us to develop our plan for the world if we had been subjected to the bright lights of publicity during those years. Sounds to me like fake news. Unquote. David said that the world conspirators were grateful to the media who went along with their desires to hide their plans for world control. He indicated that it would have been impossible for them to develop their plan for the world if the media had shown the public the truth during the years from 1951 to 1999. That was fake news. I'll continue with this quote. But the work is now much more sophisticated and prepared to march towards a world government. The supernatural sovereignty of an intellectual elite and world bankers is surely preferable to the national autodetermination practiced in the last centuries. Unquote. This was said at a Bilderberg meeting in 1991 in Baden, Germany, attended by then Governor Bill Clinton and by Dan Quayle. David indicated in this statement that the world was prepared by their work and the media's deception for a world government. Are you in agreement that the intellectual elite and bankers are the choice for being your masters? Who is David Rockefeller anyway? His grandfather was nicknamed Devil Bill, because he was a traveling snake oil salesman who had loose morals. He sold ointments to the populace for the one purpose of making a quick buck and was not interested in the healing of their diseases. One of his sons, John Rockefeller, was only 18 when he borrowed $1,000 from his father. He also had to pay it back with interest. David went into the commodities trading business, trading meat and grain prices. After a year, when he was 19 years old, oil was discovered in neighboring Pennsylvania. Oil drilling became rampant. Cleveland businessmen were drawn into the area, but Rockefeller determined that refining, not drilling, was the way to go. He built a refiner in Cleveland. Obsessed with the business of oil, he developed new products to sell, one of which was drugs. By the age of 25, he had the largest refinery in the nation. By 1870, he formed Standard Oil of Ohio. Rockefeller knew that the refinery that had the lowest transportation costs would win the war and become the largest refinery. So he made a secret deal with the railroads. He soon was one of the wealthiest men in the world, as he owned just about the monopoly on oil. He controlled 90% of all refining oil in America and about 33% of all the oil in the world until the time of the presidency of Teddy Roosevelt, when Teddy led the movement to disband the Standard Oil monopoly. But this didn't hurt David's control at all. It actually increased it. David had shares in the split-up companies, and the worth of the split-up companies was worth more than the single company, Standard Oil. For example, Standard Oil of New York and Standard Oil of Kentucky became Mobil Oil. Standard Oil of New Jersey merged with other Standard Oil companies from other states and became Exxon. Standard Oil of California became Chevron. Standard Oil of Ohio became Sohio, which was bought out by British Petroleum. Standard Oil of Indiana became Amoco Oil. David joined with the House of Morgan and formed an alliance. It was financed by Jacob Schiff and Lowe. Major banking institutions financed David's expansions. It greatly increased David's power in politics. All the Rockefellers, which involved David, Nelson, Winthrop, Jay, and others, were vice president, governors, congressmen, advisors ad nauseam. If you are still disbelieving that Rockefeller was leading the country into a one-world government, what about this? This is a quote from his own book. Quote, David says, "For more than a century, ideological extremists at either end of the political spectrum have seized upon well-publicized incidents, such as my encounter with Castro, to attack the Rockefeller family for the inordinate influence they claim we wield over American political and economic institutions. Some even believe we are part of a secret cabal working against the best interest of the United States, characterizing my family and me as internationalist, and of conspiring with others around the world to build a more integrated global political and economic structure. One world, if you will. If that is the charge, I stand guilty. And I'm proud of it." Whoa. It has been revealed that Mark Zuckerberg is the grandson of David Rockefeller. His true name is Jacob Greenberg, also grandson to Hank Greenberg. Police records show that Jacob Greenberg was arrested for possession of marijuana when he was much younger. The venture Facebook was funded with a $500 million from a CIO-owned bank. When I went to Australia to preach for a week, I met this preacher for the first time. He flew in from New Zealand, who joined me in preaching. I had never even heard of him before. I met him. His name was Arnold Kennedy. He came and preached for us twice while he was visiting in the United States. We became lifelong friends until his death about a decade ago. He told me that he was just an average churchgoer until he retired. Then he began to study the Bible. That's what happens. When a person begins to study the Bible, he soon became a Christian identity Christian and wrote some of the best pamphlets and booklets available today. Here are parts of one that he wrote. I'm going to quote him. "After World War II, this is Arnold writing, things began to change greatly for the Saxon lands, and at a swifter rate in the 1970s with the boat people coming to our Saxon shores. In Holland, for instance, when the first boat people came, all the church bells rang across the land to welcome them in. To the churches, this was a warped outgrowth of missionary work. Ah, yes, those missionaries. They stepped over the wretched, starving poor of their own kind, but did not for them. Rather, they happily trundled off to the far reaches outside the realm of Christendom in God's name," means authority, "to bring them, the beast of the field, to Jesus." That nitwit Dr. Livingstone, for instance, converted only one beast of the field, and it went back to its gods when it learned that Livingstone's God, I say God with a little g, as Livingstone, did not represent our father at all, would not let him keep all of his wives. The melting pot is a dream come true for the churches. It is the point in time when all those ethnoses can come together in one realm, the lands of Christendom, the lands of the Saxons all under one name. Ah, yes. And teaching children the song, all the children of the world. Jesus loves them all, red, yellow, black, or white. At last, all the nations are brought before Jesus, as it is stated to Matthew. To them, it is quaint. But as what Jesus warned of, and those who did this, he did not say thanks. Instead, go away, you workers of lawlessness, I never knew you. Now, some 30 years after the boat's people's first landing in the realm of Saxondom, the hordes outside are still pressing to get into our realm. They are not squeezing to get into any other realm but ours. Unquote. What do you think Arnold would have written about the Michigan Board of Rabbis joining with the Central Conference of American Rabbis, the Rabbinical Assembly, the Candor's Assembly, the Union for Reform Judaism, the Orthodox Union, the Rabbinical Council of America, the United Synagogue of Conservative Judaism, the Anti-Defamation League, the American Jewish Community, the Simon Wiesenthal Center, Republican and Democrat government leaders, and other United States and global Jewish organizations in condemning the recent executive order barring many refugees and immigrants from entering our country. Therefore, the Jews support the executive order's goal of ensuring, quote, those that are admitted to the United States do not bear hostile attitudes towards it and its founding principles, and prohibiting the mission of those who would oppress Americans of any race, gender, or sexual orientation, unquote. In addition, the Jews hold dear the Torah's frequent reminder that we Jews understand what it's like to be considered the stranger. And thus we hold aloft the teaching, and you shall not wrong a stranger, neither shall you oppress them, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. Exodus 22:21. But why do they ignore Nehemiah 9:2? And the seed of Israel separated themselves from all strangers and stood and confessed their sins and the iniquities of their fathers. Don't you think that is hypocritical for all these rabbis and Jewish groups pushing for non-Israelite strangers to come into Saxon land, while at the same time advocating to keep them all out of the land of Israelite? Stranger means different things in scriptures. For example, an Israelite stranger or non-Israelite stranger. Well, Arnold continues, quote, it was that generation whose party was pooped on by the Great Depression, but worse still by Hitler, who was a real wet blanket on the melting pot party. Imagine the disdain by these modern Saxons when Hitler banned lewd entertainment such as cabaret, as well as modern art, which he labeled as decadent, and modern architecture, which he called cosmopolitan rubbish. But he also banned modern music, which was basically ancient voodoo. And yes, he banned race mixing. How could the Saxon world, at last free from biblical rules, bear Hitler's laws that seemed as restrictive as Old Testament laws? Yes, his vision was a witness to Saxondom. But Saxondom had sucked up Babylon and thus with Edomite leaders declared war on Germany and danced in the streets at its death, unquote. Hitler was against race mixing. Hitler was against lewd entertainment, against modern art and modern architecture, against modern music. I got a question for you. Are you for it or against it? Do you agree with Hitler's policies on these issues? Now we'll go back to Arnold. Arnold says, this is the greatest achievement of Babylon, the melting pot. It is the dream of melting pot lackeys, the Judeo-Christians. It is their ideal. To them, Hitler was a monster who, if alive today, would divide the melting pot. But wait. Jesus said he was divide the melting pot. Does that make him a monster? That is a Jesus what the Judeo-Christian cannot stomach, unquote. Arnold continues, today, quote, Saxon children are the oppressors of Saxon dads, never chastised by parents, and thrown into a world run by wolves and allied predators. In this realm, the Saxon culture is dead. Music is voodoo. News is anti-Saxon slander. Fashion is homo and Jew-made. Architecture is Jewish from the Bauhaus movement. Art is Jewish and African tribal. Top jobs go to the whores of the Edomites, but the very top are in the Edomite hands only. Environmentalism is about making the world a better place for hunters and gatherers dressed up as lambs, beasts of the field. In such an environment, the social stress on Saxons will cause them to stop breeding. Indeed, Saxons have all but stopped breeding, believing the world is not a place to raise children, and the world is overpopulated. This environment fetters farming, furthering the death throes of the Saxons, as Saxons were made to survive only by farming. Saxons cannot live as beasts of the field. Saxon men need causes to stand up for. Yet the only causes one can offer are made by Saxon haters. Thus they are pointless causes. Saving native plants and whales, while untold Saxon babies are slaughtered every day in abortion clinics. With no truth taught from the Bible, our light has gone out. We, the stars and lights of the world, have fallen to earth and have been snuffed to be replaced by fake Edomite stars, television, film, and sport whores. This is truly our darkest hour. The night is at its darkest. The Saxons do not know what to fight for. They do not know that multi-racism is a war. Those Saxons who do say anything at all are quashed by brain-smutting Saxons who will die fighting to uphold the right to be a mob of heathen twits. Indeed, the Saxons were all too keen to smash Germany, drain Zuid Africa, and end segregation in the United States. They also were eager to end the white Australian policy in Australia and ridicule Rhodesia, slander the former Belgian Congo, and dump all former colonies to keep playing the international sports, having international voodoo music and international Talmudic entertainment and multinational sold goodies, unquote. I think that Arnold was against everything that Rockefeller did. He calls it Saxon's darkest hours. Do you believe that we are living in the darkest hour of our history? My conclusion. Pastor Blanchard emailed this message, which I agree wholeheartedly. It says, quote, the churches of the New Testament were the churches of the New Covenant inaugurated by the blood of Jesus Christ, Luke 22:20. The only parties to the New Covenant are the house of Israel and the house of Judah, Jeremiah 31:31-33, and Hebrews chapter 8:8-10. They, and only they, comprise the biblical churches. In Ephesians chapter 2, verses 11 through 21, Paul discusses two groups of people as the church. In the context of the new covenant and the prophecies of this reuniting of both houses, this is what Paul was referring to. I, meaning Pastor Blanchard, have 10 commentaries on Ephesians in my library, and not one of them gets this right. Nothing has changed. The biblical church is still comprised of the redeemed physical descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So if this is correct, do we have any biblical churches today? I added, almost none. Back to Pastor Blanchard. The established approved churches of every denomination are comprised of racial admixtures. They are, in fact, mongrelized assemblies. And there is nothing I or anyone else can do to turn a mongrelized assembly into a biblical church. Hence, if there is no church, there is no power of God available. It is just that simple. I know for many it's a tough pill to swallow, but the truth is the truth. You must decide what you're going to do about it. Either seek out the truth from the evidence of the Bible or go along to get along. For me, God has only given me a limited time on this planet. It's up to me to choose to follow the truth or not. How about you? Unquote. May we add to our imprecatory prayer the leaders who have thrown away the law of God and are attempting to destroy our race. Our Father, have mercy on our souls. May you expose what our leaders have done and what they have believed. Turn our people back to the law that you gave us many years ago. Forgive us for our neglect of it. Give us another Moses, another Daniel, another Paul, and may we enjoy the benefits of the covenant that you have made and have kept faithfully all these years. Blessed be the Lord God of Israel.